ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You're the Prime Minister. What's your first move? Make Australia a green energy superpower. Fix the housing crisis. Treat mental health as a national priority. The Economy Stupid is talking about what Australia could become if we had the courage to choose it. Search for The Economy Stupid and look out for Choose Your Own Australia. Find it wherever you get your podcasts and the ABC Listen app.
Coming to you from the lands of the Kulin Nation on ABC Radio National, this is Life Matters. Hello, I'm Beverly Wang. When I say the word home, where do you go? Are you transported somewhere straight away? Maybe to the place where you live, a place where you can curl up, feel safe, read a good book, or listen to Life Matters, of course. But your sense of home doesn't have to be a physical place. What if your sanctuary isn't where you live, but where you feel most like yourself? It's summer on ABC Radio National, so we're bringing you some of your favorite stories from the year gone by. And today, we're exploring the idea of home, not just where it is, but what it means. And then, what happens when you love your friends, but the kids? Not so much. Well, the aunties are in the house to counsel. Let's talk. Is your home your refuge, or are you still looking for that sense of safety and belonging? This is what I want to hear from you about alongside my guest, Dr. Chris Cheers, a psychologist, educator, and author. Hi, Chris. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
So let's start with the personal, because when I think of the word home, I actually think of a smell. I think of the scent of rice steaming in a rice cooker. And that is, to me, a very instantly comforting scent. What do you think of when you hear the word home? And has that actually changed over time?
I think of couches.
Yeah.
I think of the feeling of being in a couch. I think of my family couch growing up. It was like brown velvet.
Oh, classic.
And I think about the couches now that I live in with my partners, with my friends. That I feel like the couch is the moment where you lean back and your partner, you know, puts their head on your lap, you watch TV.
You cuddle up.
You cuddle up, or your friends gather and they talk around the couch. So I really think of couches when I
have you got
home.
A platonic ideal of a couch?
It's got to be soft and comfortable, and you really got to lean in and be like comforted by the couch. Yeah,
yeah. No rigid hard frames. You got to be able to put your head everywhere you like. What do you think of the word sanctuary and home? Can these be two completely different things?
I think home normally brings up the idea of people and belonging. Like normally when we think about home, sometimes it's associated with that sense of belonging. And belonging is about the ability to be authentic and to be accepted in that authenticity. So I think home is really about that. But it brings elements of sanctuary, I think, which is more that sense of comfort, that sense of safety, that sense of being somewhere that just makes you feel not necessarily good, but makes you feel calm and grounded and comforted. I think that's what sanctuary means to people.
I've got a texter here who says, Jonathan, thank you. Home is where you can scratch where it itches.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very literal thing, but I guess, you know, to sort of elevate what Jonathan's saying here, it's a place where you can be your most comfortable and unfiltered self.
And have your needs met, you know, and be able to name your needs, your authentic needs,
not
and have them
met. Not mask or restrain, yeah.
Pretend you're not itching, yeah.
Now, do you think most people realize when they found the place that they call home, or do you think we take it for granted?
I think we sometimes don't notice where our home is, or we don't allow us enough time to go there. I think the pressures of like productivity and going to work and making money and doing what we think we should do, I think takes over from actually going, no, where is home for me? Where do I want to spend more of my time? And giving yourself permission to do that.
You read an article for Archer magazine in 2022 about the subject of home. And in that article, you defined it as safe, known, and predictable. Did you mean that both in the physical and the psychological sense?
Yeah, in the psychological and physical sense, because in a way, home is where you feel safe, where you feel belonging, as I sense, but where you feel a sense of security. And for your body, for your nervous system, we feel safe when things are predictable because your brain's desperate to try and see threats. So when things are predictable, we feel good. So basically, home is a place that has like routine, ritual that's pretty like secure in the sense that, you know, it's not going to be same. It's not going to change. It's going to be the same. So when your nervous system has these places that are predictable and safe, that's where they start to feel like home.
But I just want to paraphrase also, because also in the article, you write that our brains are programmed not for necessarily for contentment, but for vigilance as a survival instinct. So in some way, does looking for a safe haven go against that?
Yeah, our brain often goes against our good life, really, a lot of the time. Because from an evolution perspective, brain is there to make you not die. And the best way to not die is to notice all of the threats. But then we develop this really annoying thing, this prefrontal cortex, that is able to imagine threats that maybe don't really even exist. And this is what like social anxiety can sometimes feel like. It's actually safe, but our brain creates this idea that it's a threat. And then as soon as an environment becomes unsafe, our body reacts to that sense of threat. So it's desperate to find those threats. So instead, we can actually train it to be mindful, to try and notice, hey, let's look at our present. Are we actually unsafe? No, in our present right now, we're okay. And we can really help our brain maybe act against its instinct, which is to focus on threat, and really just notice, no, we are safe, and where can we find that safety, and where are the places where we're most likely to feel that safety?
We're talking about building a sense of home. Maybe where you live does give you that sense of safety that Chris Cheers is talking about, but maybe that hasn't been the place for you. So I'd love to hear where else you've sought that and built that. It can be, can it be a person? Home can be a person. Maybe home is your pet. Maybe home is another space that isn't where you go to sleep at night. Now, Chris, like I said, not everybody's home can feel safe. I can remember times in my life, you know, tumultuous childhood, that home didn't feel like the best place. And I think we need to acknowledge that home sometimes can have a bad feeling. And so when we talk about finding home elsewhere, geez, it's complicated, right? Because you can even feel guilty that where you feel most at home isn't in that home or family space.
Yeah, the pressure to sort of go with these traditions that we should feel at home where we grew up or with our biological family. You know, it's important to sort of notice those kind of forces that act around us to tell us that's where we should feel safest, because that's not true for many people. And we really should recognize and really honor those places of safety we find later in life, whether that's chosen family, whether, you know, your sense of home might be at work, it might be with friends, it might be at, you know, a beach or in a park, wherever you feel safe. And I think also thinking about online spaces here as well, right? Like today, a lot of people feel safe in online environments, and as opposed to maybe school or their workplace, it's actually when they log in and see their sort of connections online, that's where they feel safe. So really honoring wherever your body feels is telling you your sense of safety and belonging, that's home.
Digging into kind of more of the psychological background of home, but maybe in the literal sense, I mean, let's talk about psychological safety as maybe a pillar of feeling at home. Can you explain what that means in case someone's listening and they think, oh, what does that actually, I don't get that.
One way to think about it is your body has sort of three different emotion regulation systems. We've got the threat system, which we just spoke about, which is when you're in that fight or flight mode. You've got the drive system, which is when you're trying to achieve something or doing something to achieve. And that's all about like dopamine. Then the third one is your soothe system, which is the system that's all about oxytocin, which people might recognize as that like that thing that's released at childbirth to connect mother and child. But oxytocin is also released when we hug a loved one, but it's also released when we are in safe spaces and safe environments. So we've got these three emotion regulation systems, and we spend too much time of our lives in drive, try to achieve, and in threat, thinking we're under, you know, under attack. So what we don't spend a lot of time in is that soothe system, that oxytocin parasympathetic. So it's your system that's, it's not fight and flight, it's the rest and digest. So what we need to do is get into that system, that soothe system, because from a biological level, from a psychological level, the more time you spend in a soothe system, in like safe environments that you feel safe in, the better general well-being we have, the longer we live, and the less anxiety and depression we have.
I hear that, but I can't help but wonder if our culture sort of is stacked against us in that respect, because there is this drive to be productive, go out in the world and hustle, and there is actually a sort of a survival reality, a need to do that. And we tend to de-emphasize rest and the soothe cycle as, I'm not doing anything, I'm being lazy, or I don't deserve this. It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, like in the words of Tricia Hersey, rest is resistance, right? We have to notice the culture that tells us to drive, like to achieve, that a culture that focuses on threat, and actually think about how can we resist that? How can we see rest as productive? Because most of the time, if you're actually trying to improve your well-being, rest is productive. You know, if you're trying to reduce stress and anxiety, rest is productive. And when I say rest there, I basically am saying going somewhere where you feel like home, where you feel safe, that's predictable, that you feel that comfort, that's really going to make a huge impact on your well-being.
Now, do you think also, though, that kind of yearning for home manifests in why, you know, on social media, people are very obsessed with presenting their interiors a certain way?
Yes. Well, beauty and aesthetics, like the environment can make a huge impact on our ability to feel like safe and comforted. Like one person's safe and comfort environment will not be another person's safe and comfort environment. Like when you picture your perfect like lounge room space, that will help understand what you like in aesthetics. You know, do you like things to look a particular way? And actually aesthetics and beauty are a really important part of psychology that we, you know, there's a reason we like pretty things.
Well, and when you step into, you know, a museum or something that's been designed really well, the light is flowing in, you do feel a different kind of way. You do actually feel in your body a sense, I think, of uplift, don't you?
Yeah, well, our senses, that's our ticket to feeling comfort, right? Like, you know, how the things we touch, the things we feel, the way the light is, what we can see, what we can feel, what we can taste, what we can, you know, smell in those environments, that's how our body remembers things. And in the end, comfort, safety is all about being in spaces that in the past have been safe spaces for you. And your body will tell you somewhere safe based on your memories of the sensory perception, you know, that you're making at that time.
We are having a really wide-ranging conversation about what it means to feel at home, both in the physical sense where you live, but also in the psychological sense of being safe, being soothed, being able to let down your guard and rest. Go to our first caller, Margaret in Nowra, New South Wales. Welcome to Life Matters. Is there a special place in your memory that makes you feel like home?
Yes, there is. I grew up in a unstable domestic situation and lived near a river. And so I taught myself to swim at three. And so the home, the river became a very safe place for me. And it was just a quick walk and I could be at the river. And on a curve of the river, there was a huge river red gum. And with all of its roots splayed out, holding the bank. And you'd climb up and down those roots and climb up in the tree and jump or dive into the water. And all of the sensory things that were being talked about were present in those experiences, you know, being held by the water, being so soothed by the water, the environmental ease of it all. So yes, that was not that I thought about it as a child, but on reflection, yes, you know, the river was my mother, and in a way, and you know, the environment held me.
Margaret, you've described that so beautifully. You've really carried me away to that image, and I've been with you picturing it all. It sounds so beautiful. As a child, when would you go to seek comfort at the river and at the tree?
Any time, really, because I might go down to the river to catch fish or mussels, and because I could swim and it was safe, you know, I'd go down. I didn't use it consciously as a place to get away because my father worked during the day. So daytime, you know, was okay, but my mother was stressed and busy.
That is really, really interesting and a really beautiful story. Have you ever gone back as an adult to see if that tree is there or visited the river again?
Yes. Yep, I have visited back a couple of times. The tree was still there, but it's gone.
Okay. Well, it lives on in your memory, obviously, and that's a beautiful story. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. 1-300-225-576 is the number. You can call in and tell us about your special place that made you feel at home, just like Margaret has so beautifully, Chris. And it made me think of, you know, it's kind of a cliche, we joke about it, but nature is healing.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, home and comfort will be from nature. You know, I was just listening to that story that just so vividly painted that picture of all the sense memory and how that relates to our sense of comfort and home. And I was thinking about I grew up near the beach, and mine is, you know, we're diving under waves, in the ocean, has a real, and even when I do it now, it returns me to that feeling. And I think it's that sense of comfort that comes from nature, comes from water, you know. These things really help give us that sense of home too.
I think we, as sort of modern people, are really in need of soothing. Mm. And we don't have a lot of sources of that, or even to understand that we are in need of that, right? It's hard to know what you don't know.
And I probably go to the ideas of eco-psychology here, right? And different ideas of sometimes we need to get back to the basics. When we think about before we started, you know, building the internet and technology and buildings and all these things, we had water, we had country, we had nature. So sometimes that's what we need for our bodies to feel grounded, to feel safe, to feel secure, is sometimes getting out in nature and feeling that can have there's a lot of research to back this up. Time spent in nature increases our sense of well-being.
Mm, and I just want to put out the number for the National Domestic Family and Sexual Violence Support Service, 1-800-RESPECT. You can call them on 1-800-737-732 if you are in need of help. So many lovely messages and calls coming in. Let's go straight to Ruth in Narm, Melbourne. Where do you feel most at home?
Oh, hi, good morning. Well, I was born in Oxford and I grew up in London. But London's a big sprawling place. And whenever anyone said to me, "Where are you from?" I never really knew what the answer was. And then I came to Australia and I went backpacking for about a year. And then I went back and I lived in Leeds in the UK in the north of England. And much as I love Leeds, I felt more at home in Leeds than I had in London, but I still miss three things. I always feel emotional. So there were three things, and they're nature things. And one was the blue sky.
Yeah.
So these are Australian things. I'm back in Australia now. I've lived in Australia for 23 years. But I miss three things. The blue sky.
Mm-hmm.
it's kind of but I missed the blue sky. I missed the sound of the Australian magpie, and I missed the smell of a gum tree on a really, really hot day.
Yes, Ruth, I'm thinking you're making me think of
those three things are so, so important to me now.
It's interesting. So, did that help you make you realise that you were more Australian than you thought?
Well, I feel completely Australian.
Yeah.
Like if someone said to me, "What's your nationality? What's your citizenship?" You know, I am an Australian citizen, but I am an Australian, and I feel way more at home in Australia than I ever did in the UK. And I can't explain it. In some ways, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But it's when I came back, it was those three things: the blue sky, the Australian magpie, and the smell of gum trees on a hot day.
Why do you think that made you choke up just then, Ruth, sharing that?
Because it's a very emotional thing. Like, I can't believe how I would have lived my life if I hadn't found Australia.
Wow.
Like, I can't imagine living in the UK now. Like, I just think I'm so grateful for the fact that I can live here because this is my home.
Yeah, I understand that, Ruth, coming from a migrant background myself. You know, my parents moved to Canada many, many decades ago, and my mother could not imagine, I think, living in Taiwan again. You really adapt to your new country. And, you know, 30% of Australians, people living in Australia, are born overseas. So I'm sure that many, many people can relate to some part of your story. Chris, cheers. The feelings are strong today. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and you can really hear how it's attached to particular sensate, like the sound of the magpie,
memory.
The sense memory.
Yeah.
And it's You know, often we talk about, you know, in terms of trauma, that sometimes we can be triggered back to that trauma by things from that memory or that time. But it acts in the positive way as well, right? When we can be triggered back to that sense of home or that feeling of comfort by senses that were associated with those good times in our life, be the blue sky or the magpie, and trying to notice those and bring those into your life is really important.
Wow. It is, it's really, we are really kind of dislodging so many emotions associated with home. And of course, it's one of the core things that we cherish in our lives that we work so hard to get, right? Actually, that brings me to my next question. You know, we are living in a time where it's kind of hard to find a home. And I wonder whether in your practice, anxiety or distress about not being able to find that place for yourself is coming out in the conversations you have with your patients.
Absolutely. I mean, when we think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the first need before you can get anywhere near kind of well-being is a sense, like a place of safety to stay, to live. And a lot of people who are in, uncertain or unpredictable, like renting arrangements, that's something I see a lot in my practice. People, you know, just being told out of nowhere that they have to move out of their home or the rent increase, which they can't afford to pay, has an immense and immediate impact on stress, on anxiety that I see all the time. And this is why it's so important to do anything we can to support, you know, trying to get people into safe homes, safe housing needs to be the first part before we look at anything to do with like mental health and well-being.
How do you see people's mental health improve when they get a place that they feel like this is mine, nobody can remove me from there?
Well, as I mentioned before, think about the body. When it's in a place of uncertainty or it can't predict or not know what's going to happen, it is a normal response for that body to go into anxiety and threat, right? Because it is in threat. So as soon as that body is put in a place of predictability, of routine, of safety, the body has a normal response, which is to calm, which is to not be in that state of anxiety and stress anymore. So to put it simply, you can't not be anxious if you're in an unsafe living environment. You need to do that first. And as soon as you get it, the body will immediately, and as it should, go into that sense of calm to let you know you're safe.
Let's go to Julio, who's calling in from Rushworth in Victoria. Welcome to Life Matters, Julio. What does home mean to you?
Well, home is Australia. Home is the country in far away from humans, and I don't mean that in a nasty way, but I work in the service industry since I landed in Australia 50 years ago from Uruguay. And I found that my affinity to country Victoria, far away from, the cities, was the place for me. I discovered Echuca way back in 1974 when I landed here. And working in the tobacco plantations at the time, it was huge. And over the years, I found that the most peaceful place for me was the listening to the kookaburras, listening to the wind hitting the trees and creating my environment, my shed, my tools, and do artistic stuff out in the country. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm 69, and not only do I love this country, but I felt, every time I've been overseas, like many Australians, that I miss home. Mm. I miss Melbourne. I miss the country things that we do here. And Rushworth took me 10 years or more to discover this place. 2 hours away from Melbourne, but absolute paradise.
Yeah. Julio, I see in my notes here that you moved to Australia as a refugee from Uruguay. And
that's right.
I wonder if you ever feel homesick, or what is your relationship from your home country of origin?
Well, I tell you a funny story. Many, many years, because we couldn't return for at least 10 years. When I went back after 10 years, like many Uruguayans who love meat, I went to so-called barbecue place in Uruguay in Montevideo to eat some meat. And after 10 years, my brain just forgotten many things that we used to eat, that we used to order. And I said to the people in the shop, "Oh, look, what does that mean? Obviously in Spanish, I said, "What does that mean?" He says, "Oh, you're not from here, are you?" Well, I was born here. I lived 16 years until the dictators decided to take it on the students and kill the people. And so we left. And, at the time, the Australian government under Gough Whitlam was just humane government and provided us, you know, political asylum to many Uruguayans, Chileans and Argentinians. So we found ourselves in Australia. But going back to the butcher shop, my brain just switched off all the stuff that I was supposed to remember quite easily. And I couldn't order. And then some other guy next to the butcher next to me says to me, oh, you're a foreigner.
Yeah.
You don't even speak like us anymore. I go, well, I didn't notice that until that time. And look, I don't know. It's just comfort of being at peace, you know.
Yeah.
Australia has been a great country. Like, we all know how wonderful this place is. Yes, we do have problems, but, hey, there's a lot of very beautiful places in this country. We can all find one, and there's lots and lots of places to share.
Julio, thank you for calling in and reminding us of that, and really appreciate your appreciation. And I just want to reflect with you, Chris, this sense of movement, displacement, leaving one country, going to another. I can relate. I made myself a migrant after my parents made themselves a migrant. I don't know why sometimes. Not, you know, just kind of a funny thing to do to yourself. And so I can really relate to feeling like, where do you belong? And also this idea of realizing, going back to make you realize that you actually belong more to the new place now. And there's a lot of feelings that can come up as a result of, like, people not recognizing you, your origins, for example, like Julio was pointing out.
Yeah, I think I reflect on the resilience of the human brain and body there when I think about that, that at times of torment, of when you're being, you know, uprooted and moved to a completely different side of the world, that the brain can, over time, find a new home, you know, that we can find that sense of safety, that sense of comfort somewhere new eventually. And I just think that the optimistic side of me just really listens to that and thinks of, you know, when people are in those times where they're feeling like nothing good is going to happen or it's unpredictable, I'm not feeling safe, that sense that you can find that safety somewhere else and then find that sense of home at a later time in your life is a really, the resilience of the brain and the nervous system always is a wonder to me.
We can heal our traumatized brains.
Yeah, we can find home.
There's hope there. May calling in from NAR, Melbourne. May, your sense of home is wrapped up in what your grown sons consider home. Tell us more.
Oh, yes, Beverly, thank you. We sold the family home after living in it for 43 years and our sons grew up in it. And that was 8 years ago. And my oldest son had moved to London and been there for a long time. And he visited us last year the first time in this house. And he turned to me one night and he said, Mum, this house feels just like home, like our other house felt like. And I was taken aback by it because it was completely different suburb. Decorations, you know, furniture, everything completely different. And I was so chuffed that he felt that way about stepping into this house and still felt like home.
Had you been worried that he wouldn't find it so, May?
Yes, I was a bit because both our sons did not want us to sell the house. They were so dismayed. They were really upset about it. And, you know, you can't sell this house, Mum. You know, this is the house we grew up in. This is, you know, we played footy around the corner and, you know, went to the beach, you know, every day and this sort of thing. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but it's the best decision for us to make. And so they were quite upset about it, especially the one in England, because he felt that probably, oh, this is...
Yeah, that spoke to his own sense of home, right?
Yes, that's right, you know. So anyway, it was, unfortunately, he had to come over because his dad, my husband, is not well. So he came last year and spent 3 weeks while his dad was in hospital and everything, visiting him every day. And then he just recently went back again last week. He came over, he managed to come over for about 10 days and visit again. But he just, like, stepped in as though, it'd been his home since a baby, you know, and it made me feel good. It's not a flashy house. It hasn't got views. It hasn't got, you know, but it's comforting. It's comforting to me too. I just walk in and it feels like a sanctuary. I can leave all the woes of the world.
Well, you sound very, very lucky, May. And I guess the lesson here is home is not the house, but actually the people who live there. So you represent home, and maybe that's why your son felt so at home, because that's where you are. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing. I think we're going to go straight to another call to Leonie in Port Macquarie, New South Wales. Welcome to Life Matters, Leonie. You have a history of helping women fleeing violence try to find a new sense of home.
Well, yes, and I did feel that I should make the point that for many, home is a war zone, a place to run from, unpredictable, threatening, unsafe, and that our role when I worked at the Tyree Women's Refuge, I was the manager there for 12 years, was to restore really that ability and that confidence and that belief that the women with their children would be able to make a safe home, and many, many did. Which was one of the most gratifying things about working in a women's refuge, that you could see those outcomes once women and children had the sort of support that allowed them to find the sort of home that we're all talking about today. Mm. But I thought it was important to acknowledge that for many, it is not that at all, and it's because of domestic violence.
Absolutely. We do acknowledge that. And I'm just going to give out the number for the National Domestic Family and Sexual Violence and Support Service again. That is 1-800-RESPECT or 1-800-737-732. Appreciate that reminder, and thank you for your work in what you do, Leonie. We have another caller, John in Port Arlington, Victoria. So many callers. We've got about 10 minutes left, everybody. So if you want to call in and share your story, please don't hesitate. 1-300-225-576. I'm Beverly Wang on Life Matters on Radio National with my guest, Dr. Chris Cheers, a psychologist, educator, and author, talking about what makes home home, whether it's your physical space or a place, a certain person or a pet. What is your sanctuary, your safety? And John, you're calling in from Port Arlington, Victoria. Tell us about home.
Well, home. Beverly, great to talk to you. Home's really highlighted when you're sent away to war as a conscript in Vietnam for 12 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I thought of. And we were cut off. We only had mail to contact our parents. We didn't have Zoom in those days. They wouldn't have gave us to us anyway. You think about home all the time when you're overseas. As I was a conscript, I wasn't too keen on going over there.
Yeah.
And I wasn't too keen on the army. I really struggled, but I got through it. I was very fortunate, actually. My parents' property was just on there, and it was a beautiful place. It had a kind of a 2 acres of parkland around the old homestead, it was kind of a recluse for me for most of my life.
Is that where you went and made your home after came back from Vietnam?
Yes. My parents were a little bit worried about me. I thought I'd come home and I was terrific. they said, look, John, you can work on the farm for as long as we've got it. And I did work on it for 20 years till I met my partner and moved away. To me, it was a big part of my life.
Yeah. Well, that's great that you had that to return to. Thank you so much for calling and sharing your reflection on home. Chris, I just want to come back to you for a second and check in with you. What are you hearing? Are there any common themes coming out in the callers so far?
I think I'm also hearing that what happens when home starts not becoming that place of safety and comfort, or when you're forcibly removed from your home, just the impact that has on people, that they're, in terms of their mental health, their well-being, that until you find that sense of safety again, you really do get stuck in a sort of limbo where you're not having that sense of safety in home. And I think it's good to notice that often people can provide that sense of safety until maybe you find that home. When I think of therapy, or when I think of support workers, I think of friends and family, sometimes they provide that sense of belonging and home until you make that home for yourself.
Yes, indeed. Let's take another call from Kate in Melbourne, in Narm. Welcome to Life Matters, Kate. I think you have a bit of a home sense memory to share as well.
Yeah, mine's not unlike yours, Beverly. It's about associated with smell.
Yeah.
But they're not as pleasant as rice. But I had a tricky childhood, and my sister and I would escape to mum's best friend's house. And she was quite a glamorous lady without children, and she had a lot dogs, and they smell, but that smell is so comforting
the
to me.
The doggy smell,
and she smoked, so it was dogs and cigarettes and kind of sunshine and maybe a hint of Chanel No. 5. She was quite glamorous, but yeah, it was this heady cocktail of comfort for me. And so, yeah, I love those smells now.
And it would have signified that you were, even though those smells you might on paper say, not so appetizing for you, they represented something more, safety, peace.
Safety.
Yeah?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So how do you feel now when you smell like a stinky dog and someone smoking?
Well, I have
smoking?
A stinky dog now, and I'm living my dream. Yeah.
It's fantastic. I can actually understand that comforting smell, because dogs also, pets also mean so much to us, and they can be that sanctuary animal, creature. Chris, what are your thoughts there about turning something not quite nice into something really nice?
I think it's a good lesson as well to try and know what our triggers are for comfort at home. Like, think about what are the smells or what are the tastes that bring you that sense of, or just even closing your eyes and visualizing yourself back to home can really bring that soothe system on, can make you feel comforted. So know your good triggers. Know from your past what makes you feel like that, and try and bring those back into your life.
I wonder if there's some scented candle company out there scribbling fear like cigarettes, dog smell.
Chanel No. 5 mixed with dog smell.
That's right. Very boutique. You could probably get that mixed somewhere. Jude is also in Narm, Melbourne. Welcome to Life Matters. You have experienced housing instability through renting. So how do you build a sense of home?
Yeah. Hi, Beverly. I've been renting for almost 40 years. And you can imagine how many houses and flats and all sorts of places that I've lived, including in Germany and in Brisbane. But I have that real housing instability. I don't have, I'm not waged. I'm actually on disability support pension, and I know that I'll never own a home, which doesn't bother me. But that feeling of home can just change at any time, so I can't get a 12-month lease. So I think legally I would only have 30 days to vacate, if that's what a landlord decided. So the sense of home that I have is my childhood home, and the things that bring back memories for me are the sound of currawongs, and also wattle trees. We had quite a beautiful big yard. And so if I want to feel comforted, then I often close my eyes and I think of those things, you know, my mum's cooking and that sort of thing.
And how does that make you feel when you actually consciously take yourself to that space?
I feel calm. I feel belonging, and safe. And although I do feel safe in my room, it's my only domain. But feeling of this could be permanent is that feeling that I get from closing my eyes and feeling like I'm back in my childhood home in my bedroom. Mm.
And Chris, this is what we've talked about before. Jude is actively soothing herself, right?
Yeah. So just like I was mentioning before, we can imagine perceived threats that make us anxious. We can also imagine spaces of comfort, spaces of safety that can turn on that parasympathetic system that makes us feel grounded, makes us feel calm. Mm.
Thank you, Jude, so much. That's really lovely. And so many, sense memories of nature and sound. It's really lovely this morning imagining that with you. Jeff is in Gippsland in Victoria, probably going to be our lucky last caller for the morning. Jeff, tell us about a sense of home.
Yeah, well, look, I've been having to work on a volunteer basis, but helping people come out of prison and relocate themselves in the community.
Yes, and how does that process work when you help somebody find a home?
It's very complicated because you've got to find out from them what might be a feeling of home for them.
And what do they tell you?
They've left, well, they're in a place with strangers with all sorts of weird smells, and getting out at the prison gate, they have what they call a bit of trauma, which is called prison fever, and then they want you to try and find something for them and see if it will work.
That sounds like a tricky job. Have you been successful? Can you tell us about?
Yeah. There've been a number of good successes, but it's really been about trying to. Your psychologist there would understand, but it's about matching the person with the circumstance and then get them into a place where it's going to be comfortable with them, because you can't be living in a place and feel comfortable if the people around you aren't very nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's looking for that sense of safety and security. Chris, cheers. It's been an absolutely fantastic conversation. I've really enjoyed it. The final, 20 seconds that we have so far, do you have any advice or what do you want people to take away from this conversation? Maybe if they don't have that sanctuary home, what can you advise them to do to try to create that sense in themselves?
I think first off is make the space to try and get places that make you feel like at home and the people that make you feel like you can belong and be yourself. Make that time, make that space. But when you can't, just imagine. Just imagine yourself, visualize yourself or have a cup of tea or eat something that reminds you of home, because that will have a positive impact on your well-being as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. Chris Cheers, psychologist, educator, and author. Next up, the aunties are helping you deal when you find your friend's kids kind of annoying.
On ABC Radio National,
the arts aren't just entertainment.
They're part of who we are.
Andy Griffiths.
He ended up at the centre of the earth fighting the peanut butter beast.
Now, Benno Cree.
Put their hands up if they have never been brokenhearted.
The changing nature of performance and recording in Australia.
From books to music and far beyond, the arts are just one way Radio National explores the world in full.
When you have a dear friend who has, let's say, less dear children, it's time to ask Auntie. And I'm thrilled to welcome our honorary aunties, comedian and creator of an ABC TV show on parenting called The Role of a Lifetime, Nazeem Hussain. Hi, Nazeem.
Hello. Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. And in Ngunnawal country, broadcaster and author James Finlay. Hi, James.
Hello, it's great to be back.
Okay, it's lovely to have you back. Okay, so let's do a quick gut check, James. What's your experience hanging out with other people's children? How do you rate that experience out of 5 stars?
Oh, look, it varies, but I'm giving it a solid 2.5, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Look, yeah. All right. I'll keep the rest of my thoughts to myself.
Yep. But it's nice to know where you stand on this particular situation. What about you, Nazeem? Other people's children, fan?
I think mentally and emotionally we're on very similar levels. So, I think I've always related to kids. I related to kids when I was a kid and I've never sort of stopped.
You're kind of a big kid, aren't you, Nazeem?
What was that?
You're a big kid yourself.
I'm a big kid, yeah. Absolutely. And I feel like, on my tax return, I claim an income from that, personality. I'm just being a child in an adult's body. So, yeah, it's they're fine with me. I don't know how their parents are with me constantly relating to their kids more than them, but I love kids.
Okay, great. Okay, today's message comes from Amy, who's emailed in. Amy says, "Dear aunties, I have a longtime friend who I feel like I'm losing. I need your help. We've been close for over a decade. We are both from the same town in New South Wales, but fled to Sydney at around the same time, creating our own little support network as we found places to live and built up our careers. We've been traveling together in places like Vietnam and Cambodia, and we've been each other's emergency contact and consoled each other after heartbreak. For the past few years, she's been married to a great guy. I don't see as much of her now as I used to, and I really miss that connection that we once had. I get on with her husband really well, but the main reason I see less of her is that they now have two kids." Okay. Nazeem, does this feel is this a familiar feeling when, friends kind of move on to a different life stage?
I understand how she feels because when I made the transition to full-time comedian, which basically means I work 30 minutes at night, I felt that sort of that gap between me and my friends, I'd want to hang out during the day just doing the things that we would do when we were at uni, and they're all at work. full-time jobs, you know, and I remember feeling real kind of like lonely and almost like cheated on by their choice of, you know, choosing employment over hanging out with me, their lifelong friend. But, you know, you sort of come to the realization that you can't make them, you sort of have to work around their life stage. I can't tell them to leave their work or else hang out with me like the old days.
You got to kind of go with the flow. James, as the child-free auntie in this mix, how much effort does it take to maintain ties and connections to friends who have kids? What are the challenges?
Oh, it's really difficult. And it took me a while to realize that it just gets to a point where we're like, okay, well, it's been great hanging out for the last decade or whatever. I guess I'll see you in another 10 years. Because the parents are just so busy. They've got other priorities. They have different things to talk about, like changing nappies and, you know, showing videos of their kids cutting fruit and whatnot. And it's just a different life. It's a different lifestyle. So, yeah, I've just had to come to peace with that I will be seeing less of my friends once they have children, which is what has been happening over the past fair few years. But this is the thing. Some of my friends that had kids early, I'm seeing a lot more of them now because their kids are a little bit older now. Exactly. And, you know, and so, yeah, you just have to make peace with the fact that you're going to see these friends less and you're going to have to make new friends.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I see where you're coming from and I feel that. But I feel like we've sort of become less tolerant of that sort of village that we used to live in. You know, we all used to just be amongst each other despite the various stages of life that we're in. But now it's like, oh, you've got kids, you're doing the parent thing. Well, I'm going to be over here doing this single. Like, we all kind of used to...
It's hard, isn't it?
More enmeshed,
yeah,
you know?
I think that we definitely agree that it's definitely hard to make these kind of two groups come together. I know you're champing at the bit, James.
We got to move on.
To the next chapter of Amy's saga. I will come back. I'll come back to you, I promise. But just for now, back to Amy. Amy says, here's my problem. The kids are just too much right now. They are beautiful as babies, but now as boys, they are noisy, aggressive, and rude, once pulling my hair as a, quote, joke.
Oh,
I never get to see my friend alone. It's always with her kids. They never let her attention wander from them for a second. Otherwise, they start screaming and fighting each other. I get that young kids are a handful, but I cannot think straight around them, and my friend is oblivious to my distress. Other friends have noticed this too. They say my friend and her partner do let their kids run wild, and they've also cut back on time with her as well.
Yeah.
I've tried asking her out in evenings to concerts, but she says she's too tired or can't get her partner to stay home that night, so I've given up on that. Okay. Nazim, there's a lot here. Casting judgment on your friends' children and their parenting. How is this landing for you?
I would say, like, the first step would be just try to understand that your carefree friend wants nothing more than to be carefree and is more self-conscious of her kids running around and being crazy than you are annoyed by them. Like, there's nothing more that they want than to just hang out and have an adult conversation. So the
Amy says her friend is oblivious to the distress.
I think that's probably a perception problem.
Okay.
No parent is more aware of, like, you take your kid to the supermarket or on a plane, like, the parent of that kid is like, please behave. All they want is their kid to just be normal and quiet and well-behaved and just doing some homework or something. But, you know, it's just everyone has a different approach to trying to rein their kid in, but you know, no one's going to nail it.
James, I want to bring you back in. What is a sort of red flagging itself for you in this situation right now?
Oh, I feel like I've been on the right track since the beginning. I feel like...
You're confident. Okay.
I feel even more confident. So I think no one has time for kids pulling hair when you're out for a coffee or out for lunch or something. Take these kids out of your catch-up rotation, I say. If your friend is the collateral damage... So be it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
he's just going to snip.
I'm doubling down.
You're pruning.
Well, look, if you're going to make a friend choose between their kids and you, like, what happens if they choose you? Those kids are going to be after you when they're adults.
They legally can't choose you, actually. They're obliged.
You're going to create all sorts of mummy or daddy issues in a...
Well, then that's more fodder for Life Matters. And from a content perspective, I do welcome that.
I welcome that.
Do that follow-up episode in 15 years.
Absolutely, of course. I'll still be here. Let's get back to the final chapter with Amy. And this is what she said. The reason I connected with my friend was because of her free spirit, spontaneity, and laid-back approach to life. But now I realize that's exactly the attitude that's making the kids so feral. Maybe I'm too judgmental and uptight, and I realize I must be coming off as selfish, but is it too much to ask that they are elsewhere when I'm around? I need your help to set up a boundary that allows me quality time with one of my oldest friends without worrying about having one of her kids swinging from my hair or getting upset that I'm attacking how she parents. How do I do this? You guys are having the best time.
It's very funny. Well, the thing is, I relate to the kid because I used to be that crazy kid that would just, now I'm like, oh my, like I feel so bad for my mom. And the friendships that have survived, like those are real friends. And actually, I do have.
So you were that memory. Hair pull.
I was that insane child. Like, yeah. And as if that's hard to imagine.
No,
but,
no.
You know, but I do remember those adults that were actually playful with me and how, and now we're all, you know, I'm an adult, they're older adults, but we kind of relate and connect. And I feel like there's this really long term, you know, like they would be, you know, yeah, like figures.
They remember old Nazim. Yeah.
And they accepted me for being a child. I was expressing symptoms of childhood.
What is the problem? He is a child. James, I know that you are a really direct, cut to the chase kind of person, yes. Right? But would this challenge even you asking a friend to not have their kids around while you still hang out? That is very awkward.
No, I don't think it is. So, okay. I think set up boundaries. This is because look, while Nazim, you feel like that you are the child, I feel like you've read out my letter on Ask Auntie Life Matters. Okay, so be prepared. Like, so set up boundaries because you got to think about what you want from this relationship, right? Worst case, you had a good time in the past and it's over for a while. Best case scenario, she learns and changes. But seriously, like I've got friends that are like, you know what? I don't want to bring the kids. I just want us to hang out. If this friend doesn't have the emotional intelligence to see that you're not having a good time when you see each other, I think there's question marks.
But can I just suggest that this is a friend who is probably quite overwhelmed by the status of parenting to quite like, you know, like Nazim said, you know, children diagnosed with a problem of being children.
Yeah, sure.
You know, like they're very tired. And the extra step of saying, can you find childcare? Can we hang out at a time where you're probably exhausted? Is that actually reasonable?
Well, I think I think you need to have that conversation with your friend. If you and your friend aren't able to have these conversations, then, you know, if you've known each other for that long, it shouldn't be that hard for you to actually have a deeper meaningful about how your friend is feeling.
Okay.
And how it's making you feel.
Nazim, I hear you. What do you want to say about this?
Like, I was going to say, like, maybe your friend is expecting you to raise your bar. And
in what way?
You know, just to be more, with respect, understanding of their situation. However, I think I found a middle ground. Right?
Please.
Kids, but you don't want to kick them out of the, you know, of the parents' life for an hour or two. How about you assess how much is your friendship worth? If it's worth about $500, buy an iPad, get some headphones, give it to the kids. They will shut up, all right, for as long as that YouTube video. Just get a series of Bluey videos. You will not hear a word from them, all right? It's just like... It is a drug for kids, the tablet, all right?
Yep.
So that solves all our problems at home.
Okay.
I want 10 minutes on my brain, iPad.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm really glad that we could come at this situation from two different perspectives. Nazim Hussain, thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm going to get back to the playground.
See you later. See you on the swings. And James Finlay, thank you. You can hear James on ABC Canberra, or you can read his book, Great Sexpectations.
If you have a vexing dilemma that needs our help, having the aunties talk it out can not just be very helpful, but also very cathartic as well. Write up your problem, email it to lifematters@abc.net.au. We'll get the aunties on the case. That email address again is lifematters@abc.net.au. I'm Beverly Wang. Thank you so much for your company on Life Matters today. Tegan Taylor's back with you on Monday with more of your favorite stories from the year.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.